Well, we had scheduled Jeremy Ryan for a candidate forum at this time, but we have not reached him via telephone. Congressman Ryan declined our invitation to participate in this candidate forum series. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7:37 on this Wednesday, August 6th. We will we'll continue to try to reach Republican candidate for Congress, Jeremy Ryan. We told him that he could call in if he gets the message, but we have not reached him by the scheduled time at the number that we had. Anyway, if he's listening or one of his friends is listening, he can call in. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. In the meantime, we will welcome in our guest analyst, who we were going to talk to at the end of this half hour to talk about the race in general, since Congressman Ryan had declined our invitation for a candidate forum. We are happy to have with us Susan Johnson, an associate professor of political science and director of the Center for Political Science and Public Policy Research at UW-Whitewater. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So thanks for joining us. Is Congressman Ryan in any danger of losing his seat this fall? Is he vulnerable in any way?
I think if we look nationally, we've seen that there might be a little bit of an anti-incumbency fervor. We're seeing it more so in the primaries right now. But, I mean, to be perfectly frank, I don't necessarily think that Congressman Ryan is in jeopardy in the fall.
Yeah, he certainly has a big fundraising advantage over all of his various opponents.
Right. I mean, he's doing really, really well fundraising, both bringing in money from outside the state, but also from within the state. And he did win in 2012 by about 12 points, and I understand that that's the closest that it's been since he's run, but that's still, I think, a pretty comfortable margin, particularly given that it was a presidential election year where Democrats tend to do better both nationally and within the state of Wisconsin. And also, it was a new district in 2012, so there were some voters who wouldn't have been in Congressman Ryan's district before because of redistricting. And also Congressman Ryan, because he was running for vice president, wasn't able to spend as much time in the district as he normally would during a campaign. And so I would expect that he'll be paying a lot more attention to the district and the voters in the next few months than he was able to in 2012.
Well, Paul Ryan did have a huge second quarter of fundraising, $1.6 million, which was apparently a personal best. Why do you think that happened?
Well, I think that he's quite a prominent national figure. He is the person who was the party's nominee for vice president. He's also chair of the budget committee, and should the Republicans retain the majority in the House, which is very likely, he will be chair of the Ways and Means Committee. So he's a very powerful, as we know, as your listeners know, a very powerful member of Congress. And so he is able to raise money not just from people within Wisconsin who are his supporters, but there's a lot of groups outside of the state and you know, a lot of outside interests that want to support someone who's such a powerful force in Congress and nationally, frankly.
Is Congressman Ryan interested in running for president? Would his possible presidential ambitions affect him any way this fall?
I think there's so many people, two in this state, you know, both Congressman Ryan and Governor Walker, that our names are being bantied about as possible presidential contenders. I don't know that that hurts him necessarily in his first congressional district this fall. As to the question of whether or not he's going to run, I don't see how he's not at least considering it. He was the party's vice presidential nominee a few years ago, so it's just natural. He also has a book coming out and has a pretty high-profile book tour scheduled. And candidates who are considering running for president often do publish a book with their policy ideas and prescriptions in advance of a run for president. So I don't see how he's not thinking about it. I mean, whether or not he makes the decision, I think, is something that we will hear about in probably the next, 6 to 8 months or so, as the campaigns will start getting going right in 2015.
Well, as you know, we had scheduled a segment with his primary opponent, Jeremy Ryan, who hopes to perhaps cause some confusion with his last name. How much of a splash might Jeremy Ryan make on the Republican primary ballot next week?
I saw that the GAB is predicting about a 15% turnout. So it's going to be the most committed voters across the state who vote in primary elections. And again, that's consistent nationally as well. And there are not going to be people, I can't imagine, who are going to be fooled by seeing two Ryans on the ballot. A lot of these people are used to having seen Paul Ryan's name on the ballot since the 1998 election. So I don't know that it's going to amount to a whole lot. But it is a classic political trick or tactic where someone with a similar name, or the same last name in this case, gets themselves on the ballot to be a little bit like a little fly or something to irritate the incumbent.
Fair to say that Jeremy Ryan, who is a longtime protester at the state capitol, cited many times at the state capitol for challenging, the rule that prohibited signs in the rotunda, that sort of thing, was very active during the Act 10 protests. A pretty safe bet that he really isn't a Republican?
It's interesting. I heard him interviewed on, it must have been on WPR recently, and he talked about being a Lincoln Republican and then using the term progressive Republican. And so saying that, yes, I most certainly am a Republican, but I'm just a different kind of Republican. Since, the party labels are just that, labels. I mean, he can call himself whatever he wants, but I would say that if you looked back at his past activities, which you just went through, it's hard to believe that he would be a Republican in the sense of what the Republican Party looks like now.
So just to clarify, most of Wisconsin Public Radio listeners are very politically astute as well, but the August 12th primary is it's an open primary, but you cannot vote in Democratic races as well as Republican races. You have to stick to one party if you're voting in contested races. Isn't that right?
Exactly right. So different states have different policies for their primaries. In the state of Wisconsin, you do not have to declare your party in advance. In many states, you have to actually announce yourself to the election judge, and then you're only handed a ballot of that party. In Wisconsin, it's not like that. You make the decision in the privacy of the voting booth, but absolutely, you cannot vote in the Republican primary, let's say, for the congressional race, but then switch over to the Democratic primary for maybe the attorney general's race or something like that. You cannot do that.
Can you give us your assessment? I know you're not in the first congressional district in Whitewater, but you can see it from your house, right?
Well, not from my house, but from campus. We're quite close, frankly. It's interesting because the first congressional district, we were only part of it. The campus was only part of it for the very first term of first two terms that Congressman Ryan served, and then we were in Tammy Baldwin's district, and now we're in Jim Sensenbrenner's district. But Paul Ryan has a very important role at Whitewater, in the sense that a lot of our students intern with his office, and he's very active with our college Republicans. So even though we're not in the district, I think that a lot of people still take ownership of Paul Ryan.
Uh-huh. And is it considered one of these? I read one account that said that it really could be considered a swing district, not necessarily, even though Paul Ryan might be a strong incumbent. It's not voter-wise, I guess, a deep, deep red. It's more of it could be considered a swing district. Would you agree with that?
I heard the same thing, and I have to say that it's a new district and just created after redistricting. So the first go-round would have been in 2012. And there are, areas like Janesville, which tend to trend more Democratic. There's areas on the eastern part of the district that would tend to trend more Democratic. So I can clearly see why people would consider it not solidly Republican. But what we have to remember is that in congressional races and House races in particular, incumbency is the primary determinant for people's vote choice, more so than party. In almost every other election above a House of Representatives member, party is going to be a more important predictor. Incumbency tends to be the driving force in people's decision-making about their member of the House of Representatives. And so what you see is that you see a lot of Democrats who cross over and vote for Paul Ryan in this instance because he's the person who's been their congressman for a long time. They may have met him. They may have seen him in the grocery store in Janesville. And so as a result, even though it appears that he's likely going to go on to win in November, should he not run in the future, I could see where this could be much more of a competitive district.
We are talking with Susan Johnson, an associate professor of political science, director of the Center for Political Science and Public Policy Research at UW-Whitewater, talking with her about the first congressional district race for Congress. It has two Democrats vying to challenge the incumbent Republican Paul Ryan. Congressman Ryan also has a Republican primary opponent, at least a challenger running as a Republican in the primary on August 12th. We did have a scheduled candidate forum with protester political activist Jeremy Ryan that was scheduled for right now, but he did not pick up his phone, so we do not have that interview for you. Congressman Ryan also declined our invitation. We did hear from the two Democratic candidates running for Congress in the first district in our last half hour. We'll get Professor Johnson to handicap the Democratic primary when we come back. And we welcome any questions you have about whether or not you think Congressman Ryan is doing a good job, whether or not you think he deserves re-election. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are conducting a series of candidate forums all week long during this 7 to 8 o'clock hour. Today we are focusing in on the 1st Congressional District. Tomorrow we will be talking about the 6th Congressional District. This is an open seat where longtime Republican Congressman Tom Petri is not running for re-election. So there are four Republicans who hope to replace him, and we will hear from all four tomorrow during this hour. Right now, we are talking with a political analyst, Susan Johnson, an associate professor of political science, associate dean of the Center of Political Science at UW-Whitewater, about the candidates and the issues in the 1st Congressional District. And any thoughts, Susan Johnson, on the Democratic side? Who might be successful in the Democratic primary?
Well, looking at the primary, thinking about the two candidates, I would have to say that Zerban, the person who ran 2 years ago, probably has the edge. And I say that, you know, for a couple of reasons. And to get back to the idea of turnout and the predicted low turnout statewide for Tuesday's election, he has the endorsement of a lot of the prominent political figures in the area. And what that means is that will help him with manpower and getting out the vote and things like that. So that's really important in a low turnout election, is making sure that you get your voters to the polls. So having the endorsement of many prominent office holders in the area will help him do that. He also has greater name recognition. He's held prominent positions in the area and the district in the past, and so I would say that he probably has the edge coming in Tuesday's primary.
Yeah, and what would you say are the most important issues in the 1st Congressional District?
You know, I have to go back and say it has to be the economy. When you think about some of the metropolitan areas that are found within the 1st Congressional District in Rock County and in Racine and Kenosha counties and parts of Milwaukee County, there are some areas that have really not rebounded the way that other parts of the state have after the Great Recession. And so we see unemployment rates in those areas to be significantly higher in some instances than what the statewide unemployment numbers are. And so I would think that while there's other issues that might be brought up by different candidates, I really believe that, and it usually is the case that the economy is a driving force in elections, and I would say particularly in the 1st Congressional District this year, that's going to be the driving issue.
One of our candidates that we talked to in our last half hour came out with a plan to combat poverty and thinks that Congressman Ryan decided to make that a campaign issue as well. Talk some about the significance of Congressman Ryan proposing an anti-poverty plan.
I actually heard Mr. Kalika, mention that perhaps Ryan's poverty plan was a response. I don't think that was the case. I think that he's been working on this for quite a long time in the context of trying to come forward with ideas to address different issues. And he's been talking about, making changes to the budget and talking about different programs. So this has been an ongoing thing that he's been doing. In fact, he'd been touring the country since last year, looking at holding budget hearings and looking at different poverty programs around the country. So he's been active in this area, and I'm thinking that what he's trying to do is take some of the harshness off of what many people consider to be the Republican Party's ambivalence, or even worse, toward poor people. And so he's trying to put forward some ideas that can take a conservative approach to issues dealing with poverty. And so looking at it differently. And so, for example, if what Democrats talk about is raising the minimum wage, Paul Ryan's saying, well, maybe rather than raise the minimum wage, we need to expand the earned income tax credit or do different things that way. So he's trying to put a different face on it and say, look, conservatives can look at these issues too. We may have different ways to deal with these issues, but we still are trying to work on these issues.
I'm going to take a call that we can fit in before the end of the hour. Bernie in Elkhorn. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, good morning. As a constituent of Representative Ryan's, I feel he's pretty much wrong on everything. And the thing that's scary about him is that he's such a smooth salesman. I mean, his policies toward the poor and the middle class are extremely mean-spirited. And no matter how nice his demeanor is, that doesn't change what's behind it. If Rob Zirbon's going to have a chance, he's going to have to go right after Ryan on his support for so-called free trade deals that have taken jobs out of the country. And he's going to have to go after him for his attempts to weaken programs like Social Security and Medicare. Last time around, Zirbon was not as aggressive as I think he needed to be, unfortunately.
So what do you think of Bernie's suggested strategy? Is that going to make a difference, Professor Johnson?
I think Bernie's onto something. I mean, I think that Paul Ryan is very popular within the district, and he's done a lot to promote himself within the district, and he's very well known within the district. So I think that there's a lot of popularity there. And so I agree with Bernie that Zirbon will have to be quite aggressive in taking, for example, Paul Ryan's poverty program and talking about the areas that Zirbon believes are really not helpful to the poor. So I think that Bernie's onto something.
And we have another caller who just wanted more of a clarification on the primary election rules. Can you cover that for us again in terms of no split tickets, right?
Right. And so the way, so primaries are party elections. And so it's a way for members of a party to select who their candidates are going to be going forward in the general election. That being the case, you are only allowed to vote in one party's primary election. So if you're a resident of the state of Wisconsin living in the first district, you are only able to vote in the Republican Party primary or the Democratic Party primary.
Right.
And that's pretty consistent across the country. There's a few states that are doing different kinds of things, but for the most part, that's how it works everywhere.
You don't have to declare, I'm a Republican, I'm a Democrat. You get a ballot, but you can only...
No. What I said was, in Illinois, for example, you present yourself to a judge, election judge, and you must say out loud, I am a Democrat or I am a Republican. But that's in Illinois, and other states are like that. Wisconsin is not like that. You do that in the privacy of the voting booth.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Susan Johnson, an associate professor of political science, associate dean of the Center of Political Science at UW-Whitewater. Well, thanks very much to Bill Martins for producing this series of candidate forums and to Christy Taylor and to Justin Williams for on-air production and direction. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.